This week's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. In a world where we are bombarded with things all around us, we sometimes forget to do things with our life, our extra time, the small moments, and it's sometimes very hard to feel like we're being productive. And I'll tell you, therapy can help find production in life, help guide, help have someone listen, and help have someone truly hear you with the needs that you're looking for to get out of the hectic lifestyle that we all have. I know for myself that I've used therapy for years to help me keep balanced, calm, and a set of tools that help me individually. Because when it comes down to it, we all need that extra help. We all need someone in our corner. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. Because it doesn't hurt to just try once. And if you love it, you stick with it. And if you don't, at least you tried to pick yourself to find what you need with convenient, flexible therapy model, BetterHelp. So learn to make that time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/dudetherapist today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, .com/dudetherapist. Don't wait to find the help that you need. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Dude Therapist. I am so honored and excited to bring this episode to you because today's guest is someone that I have admired and looked up to and have learned so much from. As a relationship specialist, Mark Groves is a human connection specialist, founder of Create the Love, and host of the Mark Groves podcast. Mark's work bridges the academic and the human, inviting people to explore the good, the bad, the downright ugly, and the beautiful sides of connection. He has someone, as a man, I have looked up to when it comes to feeling, being in touch with yourself, connecting with others, and how to be honest and authentic in a world that hides behind social media, a world that is driven by so much that isn't authentic at times. Mark is someone who cuts right through all of that and says it how it is, and someone that I truly am inspired by and have the pleasure of talking to today. As always, let's get right into it. Welcome to this week's episode of The Dude Therapist. I'm super pumped to have Mark Rose on because, let's be honest, there are not a lot of awesome men out there doing awesome work. And he's been doing it long enough to get a huge amount of attention for good reason. You have been changing the game when it comes to relationships and being honest and real and really just at people when it comes to what truly impacts humans and relationships. So I'm super honored to have you on. Can you introduce yourself just a tad so people can get to know you a little bit?
Well, first off, thanks for the kind words and honor to be on here with you and to you listening to Trade Your Time. That means a lot. So I'm obsessed about understanding human behavior and relationships and human systems. For me, there is no greater pathway to transformation. Maybe some, as Maslow might coin it, self-actualization. I don't know that we ever get there, and maybe the perception we have means we haven't. But I really don't think there's anything more powerful than the frictions of interpersonal relationships to liberate us and heal us.
Amazing. You really just, when you speak it, really, you can feel it, like, from you. And so I wanted to start off on a pretty real note. You're in the world of relationships. You've been doing this long enough. What do you feel has been the biggest hurdle in today's relationships that either we might not be aware of or pay attention to or notice?
What a good question. What is something that I think is the greatest hurdle? Well, I think social media has really amplified the pop psychology diagnosis of other people's ailments, like narcissism and all the things. And I think there's two things. One, there's a problem with that because that's very outside oriented. And while we want to be able to label something that's painful, and then in some way, if I call someone a narcissist, which can be an accurate diagnosis, of course, I'm not minimizing the pain that one experiences in that circumstance. But by labeling it, we then give context to it. And in some ways, we remove responsibility, you know, because I was just the victim of this person's behavior. Again, not minimizing someone's experience of victimization. But to say, like, the deeper question is, why was I a match for whatever I'm a match for? Why did I say yes to whatever I've said yes to? And when we step to that level of responsibility, then there is a grief to that, because then we have to come to the realization that we made a choice to be in a relationship or tolerate something or betray ourselves. Whatever it is, we have to actually get to that place, because without getting to that place, then we can't change because we're not touching reality. So I'd say there's that escape of reality is just monetizable, right? It's like attention. Mm-hmm. We have social media platforms that are literally designed to deal with the pain that you don't want to confront truth. The second part, I think, is that we live in a very personal growth oriented world, which I think is fantastic because we've never had access to more tools. But the other challenge of that is that we could spend our whole lives pursuing growth and never actually growing. You know, I could tell someone I took this course, but it doesn't mean I've implemented what I've learned. Mm-hmm. And there's a large celebration, especially through social media, of like presenting in these virtuous ways, which I think virtuosity is a beautiful thing when it's authentic. It's just that we tend to sort of identify through our wounds, and then we surround ourselves with other people who identify through our wounds. And who are we without our wounds? I think that's a really big, important question. If you're not, I think we all move to personal growth from a place of I'm broken, I need to fix something, there's something wrong with me. But your personal growth isn't working if you keep operating from that motivation.
Mm. You know, I've seen often this idea of the growth and it being used against someone as, well, I'm growing, why aren't you? There's so much access. There's so much possibility to growth. Why haven't you done it? Or comparing the growth that I've done to the growth that you've done, and then using that as like a villainizing that they haven't done enough or didn't do it right. You listen to that podcast?
Right.
What? You got to listen to this podcast. You follow that person? Oh, come on. That's snake oil. You got to listen to this. Yeah. And then it like starts comparing the growth world and the self-help world, or even the therapeutic world of success and growing, as something as a problem with the person that they didn't grow the right way. And how that, I've seen that so often with couples, where the husband will go on a journey, or the wife will go take some course or listen to something, and then you and go, hey, I want you to listen to this. Whoa, I don't know, that's not the thing I listen to. I listen to this. And then it becomes such a battle of who's doing it right or better. And it's so sad, even though both of them are trying, but it's not the right way, which is something I've seen often happen.
Yeah, it's such an interesting pattern, because, you know, I think of a few of the things that are happening there. One is that there is a genuine reality that sometimes in relationship we pursue growth, and then we want the other person to come along with us. And we're saying like, hey, like, read this book. Can you listen to this podcast? It's important to me. When I was in my 20s, I would have seen that as annoying, you know, from a girlfriend, which I apologize to all my girlfriends in that time, because I wasn't open to it, because I didn't think my shit stank, whatever the word is. And you know, there is a reality like, hey, I would like you to read this with me, versus like, you know, trying to trick them by putting a book under their pillow or putting on a podcast in the car, like, oh, this thing's on. What is this episode? We should just listen to it. Those are all ways that we're still trying to change people. And I think I would say that the classic archetype of that is the female trying to do that for the male. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that it's, again, trying to passively manipulate. And although the intention is positive, I want him to change, it's still a woman or a person, because it could be a dude too, is like stepping out of his own lane instead of inviting. There's like this constant orienting to, you need to change. And so what it does in the relationship dynamic, and this is one of the dynamics we talk about in our book, Liberated Love, is that then one person has to identify as broken all the time, and the other person is in a constant pursuit, leaving their own selves in order to try to change. And so they're leaving their center. And so one person is the savior and the other person is broken. And actually relationships can't heal from that place. They also can't heal from when we're both holding my way as the right way, because that still doesn't witness the wisdom within each person's perspective. Mm. And really healthy relating is about like what is possible for our relationship if I stop treating my partner as if they're a problem. And again, not minimizing when there's an addict or an abusive person or something like that, because that's very real. But it's still at the basis is like, why am I still in this dynamic?
Yeah. I love that, because I know I've seen a lot of couples in the last 2-3 years during post-COVID kind of evolving and exploding and imploding, whatever word that you feel from that experience. And to me, one of the things that I've seen a lot is how do I live with the person of now versus that image or that hope or that I would like you to change perspective, and being patient with the process of them being who they are today.
Mm-hmm.
And giving them the opportunity and grace to get somewhere different that might be more digestible, the package you're willing to be a part of, versus going, well, you haven't changed in 2 days, like get out, or like what the hell, or nagging, right? So what's that line between inviting and the pressure, and what would be some ways that someone can do that in a smarter, healthier perspective versus the way that a lot of people do instead?
I think the line is really subjective in that, you know, someone could be listening and they could be trying to invite their partner, saying they're upset, and it's been 3 years, 5 years, you know? And so I think the experience with COVID really amplified relationship possibility, but it also amplified relational dysfunction, because you have two people who are probably highly stressed, probably in a lot of fear, and now they're living together all the time. And that just is a container. I'd say it's a positive container, even though the outcomes might be quote unquote negative.
Mm-hmm.
Because listen, if something's coming up for one partner, it's coming up for the other one just might not have as much sensitivity to that. And I think when we start to orient to our partner from a place of mutual positive regard, then what we're saying is, hey, like there's actually brilliance in your feeling of disconnection from me. And although I might not feel that disconnection, it's important to me that you feel that disconnection. And how do we resolve that? So I think being able to hold a line between self-abandonment and compromise is going to be personal. But I would say that everyone needs to check in with themselves. Like, even if this person finally changed, would you want to be with them? That's a really important question. The other thing is like, no one changes when they're being harassed all the time. Like, if you're constantly saying like, you never did this, you're not, you know, like you're always criticizing, I would say first check in. There's probably like a lot of, maybe you haven't been acknowledged for your complaints, but under every complaint is an emotional need that's not getting met. So you might be complaining about a wet towel on the bed, but you're really upset that you don't feel important or validated or, you know? And so I think about that a lot in the conversation about men, is like, we keep talking about how toxic men are. And I'm like, well, why would men want to change when they're just, the baseline is they suck. Mm-hmm. Like no man wants to do that. No man wants to be with someone who sees the world that way, because then that's his world. And, you know, I think we can't shame someone into transformation. And I think a lot of the times the change of the pattern is actually the person who keeps trying to get someone to do something, when really, if we're staying in our own lane, we go, how do I change how I orient to someone not changing? Because if I stop chasing people, they now have to become an adult. And I say, listen, this is what I want to create with you, a beautiful transformative relationship that we're really working towards something that's so important to me. Do you want to do that? The answer might be no. That's liberating. Now the truth is on the table. Now we could deal with the truth, and then we can be with the pain that someone didn't say yes to us and didn't say, and that's of course a real pain, but it's probably because somewhere we haven't been saying yes to ourselves. So there's also the grief of that recognition.
You know, the pushback I hear in what you just said, even though I love that putting things on the table and the truth, I wish, I try so hard, and my style is no BS when it comes to couples, because I think that people coming to for relationship therapy or mental health in general, they don't want to beat around the bush. They want to work and deal. So we got to put things on the table. And I've said to many couples, like, if this person changed, would you actually then love them? And the answer is like, no, I'm just so tired. I'm like, so then why are you fighting so hard? And to me, something that I hear often on the pushback of just reorienting yourself is, well, what about my needs? What about me? Why do I have to be the one that adjusts? They're the one that needs to change, right? How would you deal with someone who says that? Who says, like, it's not that it's not me, it's you. We both have to do work, but I have to dampen myself and stop asking for my needs just so that I don't bother them enough? I hear that so often.
Yeah, it's a great question. I'd say there's a lot of martyr in that statement. You know, so we're not empowered, because then it goes like, what about my needs? Yeah, what about your needs? If you were fully actually acknowledging what you actually need, is this relationship providing that? Is it not? What are your deal breakers? What are not? You know, because generally what's happening there is this recognition, like, I keep compromising me for this relationship. Okay, well, what happens if we actually step to the truth of your compromises and how that makes you feel? Because at the basis of that is a lot of deep contempt. Contempt, as you know, is really hard to resolve in relationships.
Killer.
Right. And I would say the evidence, unless it's changed, is that contempt is almost always irresolvable from a couples therapy perspective or a coaching intervention. Doesn't mean it can't be, but it requires what you're saying, this like come to Jesus kind of like, yo, what's the truth? Because below contempt is a lot of probably unmet needs, also probably a lot of self-abandonment. And so it's like, I keep being with you. And I always say to people, like, 100% of the time, if you resent someone or something, because that can happen with the social media platform, that can happen with lots of things, it's because you don't prioritize yourself and you want them to be the one who prioritizes you, but they're not going to. The evidence is in the constant mathematics you've been playing for the last 3, 5, 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. And the job is to say, it's no longer your job to meet my needs. It's mine first. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, I'll be brought more alive, which means now the other person doesn't have the responsibility of my happiness. Mm. No one should be responsible for our happiness. They should contribute to it. It doesn't mean they don't have an impact on our well-being. But if my whole life is spent trying to chase being chosen, resolved, because I hear you. I hear that all the time, too, as pushback. It's like, I have to compromise? It's like, actually, no, you don't. You need to stop compromising. And the stopping of compromising is saying, I believe that you're an adult enough to step towards what we want to create. Do you want to do that? Mm. And the reality, a lot of couples, some people are going to say no. But that exists anyways. You just need it there, and then now you can move forward. Is this resolvable? But we have to have, like, why go to couples therapy if one person doesn't want to be there? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not productive. No one person can do enough work for two. And I would say that person who's trying to do enough work for two is resolving a childhood experience where they were taking care of everyone, an addict, narcissist, an abusive person.
You put it so well. I literally have three couples right now that fall into that category. And I see it a little too often. And I get so excited, actually, when both people are like, let's do this. I'm excited.
Yeah, that's
I'm ready. And it's like, thank you. Versus like one person going, I really don't want to be here, but she made me, or I really want to be here, or, you know, or else. And to me, you know, this might be a simple thing for you to understand, or people listening is, and if not, I'm here to say it is, why would someone stay in a relationship that they keep fighting that battle of you're not doing enough? And to me, it's based in a lot of fear of, well, what would it be like if I didn't have this person? I've been doing this for 5 to 7 years, and now that's all going to be gone if I let that fear and worry, all this work, all this time, and then I have to restart with another person. And they end up just sitting in that fear, which then leads to so much frustration and so much contempt for this person that they're now it's turned into, well, now I'm stuck in this and it's your fault. Versus I could have left 3 years ago, 4 years ago and done something about it. You know, your tagline and you know, your Instagram handle is, you know, create the love, right? And something I've been dying to ask you for years is what needs to be created, right? Because if you look at Fromm's book of The Art of Love, right? He comes at it from a different perspective. I love that book of the idea of
such a good book,
right? The dance and the magic. And the art, right? the skill. And I love the distinction of the create. Art is beautiful, right? Not everyone can create art, but to create something to me equals an ability in everyone to do something. What is that? What is that creation that you value, that you hold so dear to your heart, that is like the basis of your foundation of work that you do?
Well, my wife and I, one of the principles of liberated love, because we labeled them, but one of them is a fierce dedication to the truth. I think love is telling the truth. And that's why love isn't always feel good. I think that's a misconception we have through Disney movies and Valentine's Day and, you know, like all these things.
Yeah.
And we all know that it's not, you know, it's a reality. You just have to lose somebody and you realize that the capacity to your ability to love someone will always be mirrored by your capacity to hold the grief of losing someone. Because that's what you're saying yes to when you open your heart, is you're already preparing yourself. And it's like, we have to increase our capacity to hold that, because it's going to happen no matter what. We can't escape that. And I think that's a painful truth about death. It's sort of metaphorical to everything in the human condition. Creation to me is about relationships being generative, that they're generating something. And that, you know, it's, I say that relationships, like great relationships, don't just happen. We create them, in that it is a skill set. It's something that you learn. Eric Fromm in that book talks about how, like, if you were to do, there's nothing that humans fail at more than love. Mm-hmm. And yet we don't take the time to learn the art. We don't take the time to learn the skills. And it should be something that's taught in school. It's not. It's going to be the thing that has the greatest impact on every area of your life and your overall well-being. It's correlated to autoimmune, to inflammation, like all these connections. And I just think to myself, like, what is possible for us if we actually, instead of avoiding the wounding of relationship, instead of avoiding the frictions of them, instead of, you know, amplifying our defense strategies and our survival tactics, we actually say, what are you trying to teach me? Because now there's actually wisdom in our pain. There's wisdom in our suffering. And I think the hard bag to sort of hold is that usually all our relationship patterns are inherited culturally, familially, you know, religiously. Like, it could be, you know, they're all kind of synonymous. And so it's like, why me? That's not fair. Like, I don't want to fucking deal with this. And, you know, I always think of Carolyn Mace. She says, like, why not you? Mm-hmm. Like, I think of it now, like, your lineage has trusted you with the work of this. And you've, you know, I think of my parents. My mom moved from Ireland. My dad grew up really poor. So did my mom. Her dad died when she was young. They didn't have the capacity to be asking all these questions we're asking now. Like, they might have got to, why am I here? You know? But, like, now we get to say, oh, I can actually create anything. And I could create anything relationally. Why would I spend so much time trying not to be like my parents and then ending up very similar to them, or trying to avoid heartbreak and then ending up heartbroken, trying to avoid being alone and then staying alone, you know, or staying in relationships where I feel alone? And I'm like, man, to create it is to say, this is what I want, and here's what I'm going to do it. That's how I feel about it. That was a long answer.
Love that. No, it's a perfect answer. There's no long or short. It was just right. And you know, to jump into your amazing book that I had the privilege of reading and getting through, and this idea of liberation is something so profound. What do you view liberation to be in general? And what do you think liberation really means when it comes to relationships that hasn't been happening?
Yeah. Well, I think liberation to me in general is the ability to be fully self-expressed, to, like, actually through life, in this context, in the book, we're talking about relationally, because I do think it's the most potent place for these, this feedback, is that through that, I am actually celebrated and brought more alive. Like, I think about how often we leave relationships and then we do everything we love and we start to do everything we dreamt about. And I'm like, why are we not doing that in relationship? Like, my wife, about 3 weeks ago, looked to me and said, I see you avoiding that thing. Like, I see you avoiding changing how you orient to social media or whatever it is. And I was like, oh, yeah. Like, she sees me. She sees the things I don't want to see. And it's through that type of feedback that I can actually fully step more into integrity that I have built the capacity to avoid. You know, I have coping strategies like anybody. And so liberated love is actually saying, hey, instead of using this relationship to continue to live out all the things that are painful, what happens if we started to say, let's use this relationship and the painful things to actually heal and actually both individually grow and become our best selves? That's why the book really walks people through that journey, whether single or in a relationship or dating, is like, how can you use what you've been through and what you're going through to actually just keep becoming better? And like, that to me is what's possible. If that's possible through love, then that's how we orient to our families, our communities. And that changes everything. Because if someone comes to me and says, I want to create this business, I'm like, yeah, that's amazing. Like, how do I help support you? Do you want to reflect anything? I'm not saying, well, have you thought about this? Or what about this? Because I know what's possible for people. I know that even relationally, when someone's going through a breakup, I don't try to save people from the pain of it. I think it's go right into the center of it, you know, because we as a survival strategy, I think because we just don't have the capacity often to hold our own feelings, is we try to save people from feelings we don't know the value of yet. So we're like, oh, you're grieving. Let's go out to the club because that's the best strategy to get over. What is that saying? To get over an ex, get under the next. Not a great strategy. I've tried it. Oh. Not productive. Productive in different ways.
And you know, this idea of being very open and liberated, you talk about this idea in the book, and I'm going to dive into some of the things you spoke about, took some notes, and we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, let's
and
go.
I loved it. I love the book. It was
thank you.
You talk about the wrong template within our relationships that we've been taught. What has been the template that's been set up that you feel needs to be kind of tweaked, either or maybe just knocked down and reset?
Yeah,
that has been destructive or hurtful to us over the years.
Yeah, I think from a evolutionary perspective, and just like, you know, humans just keep being more self-reflective, and there's a rising in consciousness and in our capacity to choose, we have more freedom in that space. I think what we've inherited is generally relationships that don't celebrate individuation. They don't celebrate two selves. They usually require one or both people to forget about themselves. And really what we're talking about at the basis of this is codependency. And we define codependency in the book as a relational dynamic where we source safety and security from something or someone at the cost of our own needs, our sense of self, and our overall well-being. Now, codependency as a relational dynamic is really more understood, as you know, in the addiction space. So we might think in relationship to an addict, the person who's in relationship to the addict would be labeled codependent.
Yeah.
We're saying actually the dynamic itself is actually what needs to be healed. It's like we have all these relationships that are about, oh, don't share how you truly feel about dad the alcoholic. Don't share how you truly feel about the structure of our religion. Don't share how you truly feel about the culture, because if you do that, you'll be kicked out. So we, you know, Gabor Mate talks about how we have two needs, the need for self-expression and authenticity, and the need to belong. And when self-expression threatens when self-expression threatens belonging, belonging usually wins.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, like, what happens if we create relationships that are not about that compromise? That, like, I will unconditionally love you through your self-expression. We're so afraid of that. Like, I look at culture today and we're like not even able to handle difference, but relationships have to handle difference because there's two different people who have two different lenses of the world. And instead of mine's right, yours wrong, yours is wrong, and the moralizing of that, we actually, through the different perspectives, create a third perspective. And that third perspective is only created through the diverse perspectives. It's wiser than the first two. It's the mathematics of two actually create, the two individuals actually create an extra one, if that makes sense.
So it creates its own world, like its own separate worlds, or like its own little life of its own.
Yeah. So if you think about relational structure, is usually like we think of one of the most romantic lines ever said is "You complete me" from Jerry Maguire. But really, that's enmeshment, right? It's like I'm not whole and I need you. And you hear people, it was like I found a piece of myself. That sounds actually incredible. Don't get me wrong. Like, they're my soulmate. They complete me. But really what it infers is that there's something absent inside of myself that you feel. So now I feel better because you're with me. And if you leave me, I feel incomplete again. And so this is about two separate entities, two people that are celebrated as individuals to pursue their dreams, share them, you know, express, and to see what things they need to work through. And then what is created and nurtured is a space between the two people, which I see as the third entity. So it's like, we need to nourish that. That, of course, is going to have conflict and experiences, but we're saying like the deposits that go into that need to be greater than the withdrawals. Mm-hmm. And respecting that there's a sacred space that lives between the two of us. I don't think we necessarily, depending on the family system we grew up in or the culture, we don't necessarily look to relationships, no matter the kind, as being sacred. Mm-hmm. We don't. And I think that's reflective of how we treat everything, you know, but especially ourselves. And if we're not treating ourselves as sacred, then I can't possibly orient a relationship as sacred. So it's like, I think it's Richard Rudd who said that the journey to find God is the same as the journey to find yourself. Like, they're not different. Like, yeah. In the search to yourself, you find God. And I don't mean that religiously, but that there is something that you discover mm-hmm. that is the same way you feel as when you're sitting in awe of the sky or in awe of the tree. It's like, can we look at our partners with the same? It's hard sometimes. You know, like, I'm married, I have a kid. It's hard sometimes, but it's actually that practice of like, can I repair? Can I come back? Can I take responsibility? That is saying that this connection between us matters so much. And this can extend to everything. Like, recently I was, I'm in business partnership with a couple guys, and I hadn't told them that I was deleting my Instagram. And it would impact them and what we were doing. And I told them like the day before. And they were both like, wait, like, we needed to know this way before. And I reflected on it because I said, yeah, I'm sorry. I see the impact that has on you guys. And I'm really sorry. And I reflected on it. And I realized it was because I was afraid of how they would respond to what I said. And then I was afraid that they were going to try to convince me to do something that was different. So I called them both up and I said, listen, here's why I did that. And that's not fair, because I assumed that you didn't have the capacity, and I didn't have the capacity to hold your discomfort with my decision. And so I didn't trust you as adults, and that's not fair. And I'm not going to do that moving forward. Like, that's the same type of relating as I'm talking about that we would do with our partner, but it reflects to everything.
Mm. I love that. And I think that awe thing is super important. I know sometimes I make this comment to friends or whatever it is, that how lucky I am to have my wife, or how amazed I am with her, or, and they're like, come on, you're legally bound to say that. Like, you know, they make a joke at it.
Yeah.
And yeah, okay, we laugh. And I do make this joke that the two best things, moving to Vegas was the second best thing I ever did, other than marrying my wife. Mm. And then, you know, people who don't know me, I'm like, I have to say that, you know, and then I wink and make a joke. But in reality, I do believe that, right?
Same.
And I think that we are sometimes so, we get pushback and people are like weirded out by like actually appreciating and seeing the beauty and the awesomeness of your kids, of your partner, and saying, oh, I love my kids. Do you really? They're so annoying. I'm like,
right.
Sometimes, but I'm obsessed with my kids. Like, I love them.
Me too.
Okay. You know, you get that kind of weird pushback.
Yeah.
People are so uncomfortable with that. And, you talk about such beautiful things, and I'm so annoyed we only have like 15 minutes left, but we're going to try to get through it. You know, this idea of codependency that you really dive into in a chapter of the book, maybe one or two chapters of the book, I'm not sure exactly, but definitely a chapter in the book, and something you talk about often. If that is something that is so ingrained in the template that we've been taught, or the society that we live in, how do we break out of that and reset to be different for our own benefit?
Mm. Well, you or me stepping fully into our voice, self-expression, learning what we need, what we want. So many people in codependent dynamics, especially if they're, we talked earlier about that dynamic where we're like trying to get someone to change, trying to get someone to do something. We have to leave our center to do that. So if I say to someone, hey, what do you need? What do you want? But they spend their lives orienting around what other people need and what they want. They actually will have a hard time identifying it because they've always been like in hypervigilant mode.
Mm-hmm.
And if they all of a sudden ring it back a bit and stay in their own lane, but stay in themselves, take responsibility fully for themselves, now they're starting to put life force into themselves. And that will be foreign. You know, that can be, and that's why there's no transformation that's complete without bringing the conversation of the nervous system in, which we cover in the book, which I think is different than any other book that's explored this. It's like, how do attachment styles actually correlate to the nervous system? How does all of this actually correlate to this like deeply ingrained way that we relate that makes us go like, I don't know why I do that. I know better. Because there's programming that just goes into it. There's fight, flight, freeze, fawn. It makes sense. It's like, it's exactly what got you here. And we need to appreciate that, but it's not going to serve the relationship we want to create. And so that relationship dynamic of like, okay, now I'm ready to say goodbye to the thing we're talking about, codependency, self-abandonment, whatever it might be, believing I'm a problem and I need to be fixed. That means now we're stepping towards authenticity, self-expression, having a self. There is no relationship that is not served by that. There is none. So if your partner or people you're in relationship with, your parents, like, for example, when I first wanted to start writing about relationships, God love my dad. He was like, well, why don't you just take a leave of absence from work? Like, don't just leave, which is actually exactly what I'm getting about leaving Instagram too. And it's like, that means I don't believe in myself. Like, no, I need to take this full leap. And, but there is, if I'm in relationship with someone and them coming alive threatens me, or I try to get them back to play small, it means that I'm not fully alive. So that when we talk about like there's, when you become liberated, when you claim a truth, all of a sudden now the relationship has to hold the bigger T truth. And now everyone is free. Mm. And that is really threatening to relationship dynamics that are about both people staying in their wounds. Because if we're saying like, you know, how we were talking about how if we orient to personal growth from the place that there's something wrong with me, I need to fix it. That's usually what gets the book open. That's usually what gets the podcast in the ears. But eventually, and this is what we're saying through relationship, is actually what happens if what's coming up for you and the frictions of you in our relationship are actually indicating what we both need to work through.
Mm-hmm.
And so my wife and I have this agreement that we have reverence for what the other person is experiencing. Instead of saying you're wrong for feeling that, we're saying what's right with you for feeling that. So there becomes this mutual positive regard for each other. Now, the other thing that is key to healthy operating relationships is this respect for each other's path as their own, as our own. That's a hard one, because when we have taken, quote unquote, a commitment, or made a commitment, there's this need for it to work. There's this need for us to stay together. And we already know through just looking at relationships, maybe our own, but relationships we witness, that has kept a lot of people together who hate each other. That's kept a lot of people who are not happy together. And we're saying instead, bring forth without the possibility, does this need to work or does it not? How do we come most alive and align our lives if we can? And that's we're inviting a whole other level of relating, which that's actually liberating because now it says like you're not trapped in a prison of your commitments. It's saying like if we were to actually remain in a unit together, how do we actually use this as a place to actually rock it?
Yeah, I love that. You know, I don't know if you read this book, and I'm not here to put you on the spot, but Vanessa Bennett and John Kim's book, that it didn't start with it's not you, it's not me, it's you.
Yeah, I interviewed them about it. They're great.
Oh, they're great. Now, I collaborate with Vanessa often, really trying to still get John
She's
on
so
the show.
Smart.
I love John. And also, as a male therapist, I love what he does and that world. And they have this thing in the book that blew my mind and something that I've known as a relationship therapist for years. But the way they put it was, when I hear someone gets divorced and I know it's for a good reason, and I know they've been suffering and are hurt and in pain for so many years, I don't say, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. I say, I'm so proud of you.
Yeah.
Because it takes courage to finally liberate yourself to a place of you that works.
Right.
And I'd never thought of it. Not, you don't have to throw a party and be like, woo! Like, and it's still, there's grief there.
Good.
That needs to be, right? There's grief that still needs to be dealt with of a loss of a relationship and how to move forward. But instead of it being, oh man, what's wrong with you? Or like a problem of someone, but a courageous act to say, I'm not going to be in this for 20 years and just hate myself and my world because of a relationship. Because you wouldn't do that with a friendship. You would go, no. You would cut that off. You'd be like, I'm done with you. You treat me terribly. Why am I still with you? I love you, but no. But we do that. So many people do that in marriages and commitments. to the point of self-destruction. And 100%. So Vanessa, when she says this line in the book of just, I'm so proud of you. Hooray. It's like, yeah. Yeah. Sometimes we do need to end relationships and we're so afraid. I wanted to talk about two more things.
Yeah.
Even though I have about seven things on my notes. you talk really often about, you have a beautiful chapter. I think it's like 12 or 13. I didn't count, of the blind spots.
Mm.
Right. And to me, I wanted to know what you mean by blind spots for people who haven't read the book and hopefully will buy the book. And on top of that, what do you feel your like top three blind spots that really get in the way? Because I think you have like 14.
Yeah, I got to get back into it. You know, when you got, where are my blind spots? We can make this sound smoother.
Don't worry, I'll
go ahead at my instant.
It's like magic.
In ways of greed. Oh, yeah, there they are. All right, sweet. Now I'm smooth. So we refer to blind spots in the book from a place of like, we have these adaptive strategies and these things that actually propel us to engage in behaviors to not confront truth, right? They're essentially ways that we don't see reality so that we can stay in the circumstances that we're in. Mm-hmm. We have another chapter where we look at masks we wear, right? The different ways that we become, quote unquote, our personality that are actually adaptive strategies so that we don't get seen. The blind spots are so we don't see things. Now, I would say that I have two pretty prolific ones. The first one is guilt. As a kid, I'm the youngest of three. I tended to really oscillate around my mom's needs. My mom, overwhelmed with having three kids, and I often found that I was wanting to soothe her. Mm-hmm. And so I had guilt about prioritizing myself or being, you know, I think as Gen Z calls it, the main character of my life. I had a hard time doing that. And so guilt really kept me trapped in not prioritizing me. And actually, mm-hmm. using it as a protective mechanism for me actually stepping into the unknown. If like, if I start, because the way that when kids orient around other people's feelings when they're young, what they're saying is, if they're okay, I'm okay. So then it becomes about making other people okay. Now, if I start to prioritize me, I could start to feel guilty. And that could be because our family used guilt. I grew up mm-hmm. Catholic too, so it's like a double-edged sword. It's like, we start to feel guilt for actually being important. We could have been called selfish when we were young. And what happens is as adults, we have to learn how to increase our capacity to hold guilt so that we don't, usually what we do to soothe it is we actually engage in a behavior through the motivation of the guilt that's self-abandoning and again, gets back into collapsing and prioritizing others. So one is mm-hmm. guilt, that's for sure, a main one for me. The second one is blame.
Mm.
That one I have more, I mean, shame is one of them, but blame is for sure a big one because in the book we talk about our relationship 1.0, which is Kylie and I's beginning, and we overlay the learnings of like, where do you come from? How does this all impact you? And like, why do you do what you do? And we really talk about like the origins of the codependency in our first relationship. And then we broke up. We call that the sacred pause. That's what you get to call it when you get back together. And then we had relationship 2.0 in it. And very much relationship 1.0 was me saying, I'm ready to fully choose this. I'm ready to have kids. You're not. So we need to fix what's going on with you so you can fully choose this. So Kylie has to then live in shame, her blind spot. What's wrong with me that I can't fully choose this relationship? I love Mark. We're both growth oriented. We're both self-reflective. This is a good man. Why can't I choose him? And I'm getting to blame her. So I don't have to actually look at my own stuff, which is, why am I in a relationship with someone who's ambivalent? Mm. Like I learned somewhere that it was okay to be in relationship with someone who doesn't fully show up for me. Mm-hmm. When I had to come to that reality, holy moly, did my body, like, I broke into deep grief. I cried, but I chose myself, and Kylie and I chose to end the relationship because I said to her, like, this relationship, if you have to believe you're broken to be in this relationship, then this relationship is not healthy. And I can no longer, like, what happens instead of orienting to you can't choose this relationship as being something wrong with you, that there's actually a deeper sense in your body that this relationship in its patterns can't, it does not have the capacity to move forward and create kids together. And that was a major transformation because we went from our blind spots orienting our relationship to all of a sudden, like, oh, wow. She talks about it being like her body was the somatic canary in the coal mine. And I love that because it was like, wow, like, what happens if you know something on a deeper body level, intuitive level that I can't see because I'm so used to bypassing my, like, don't be with someone who can't choose you. I left that one long in the past. Does that answer your question?
No, I love that. And the last question of the day, because you are a wealth of knowledge when it comes to relationships and such an expert in the world today that I'm so honored to have you on. And I can't not ask you this, even though I have questions about triggers that I would love to ask and a quote that you have that I love, and all these different things.
2.0.
And, hey, if you want to come back on, you're welcome any day. Just say yes, and I'm there. In your perspective, what are like one or two things that you feel that anyone who might be listening or might listen in the future should and needs to hear about relationships now to implement in their life today?
What a beautiful question. Well, the first thing I would say is that you can create everything you desire. Like, it is not luck that is what makes it so people have great relationships. It is actually a set of skill sets. It's a skill set. It's possible for everyone. It's a form of mastery that we can all learn, much like Eric Fromm talks about. The second thing I'll say is that when you decide that you want to create what you want to create, and you actually like hold that vision, it then requires that you do everything in order to create that. So I always think of Abraham Hicks. She says that when you make a desire expressed, when you say you want something, everything that needs to be healed and moved through will present itself in your life. Mm-hmm. And I think when we start, instead of, you know, we've talked about this a bit, it's like, instead of seeing that your relationship outcomes and what's going on in your life are actually reflective of your inadequacy, actually start to just be kinder to yourself and see that what is coming forth for you is actually evidence of what's possible for you. That means that we're no longer, our self-worth is no longer correlated to our relationships experiences, but we are responsible for what we want to create. And it is when we start to see, like, instead of avoiding the pains and the shames of the things I've done in my life, I actually start to welcome them. And I really see this as you can't hate the thing that's waking you up because you'll reject the wisdom from it.
Mm. Dude, you are just a wealth of knowledge. I really appreciate your time. I appreciate, you know, your book, and I hope people buy it. And I can't wait to air this episode and to share this knowledge with anyone and everyone who might want it, because it is just power. And I'm so excited to share your book and to have it another suggestion on my nightstand to go, oh, you're reading that? Yes, you need to read this, because I only select a few. And by the way, in my living room library, I have the books that I want people to happen to magically maybe see. Anyone who knows me, I'm sorry that I do that to you, but sometimes, you know, if I have a good read, I'm going to put it up there. And if you happen to ask about it, I'm going to suggest it. So if you get tricked into reading something, I'm happy for you. But thank you so much for all that you do and have been doing for so many people, including myself. And I wish you all the best of luck in all the things you're doing. So thank you so much for being on the show, man.
Thanks so much for having me, man. And to everyone listening, thanks for, you know, trusting me with your time. And I'm so grateful. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to this week's episode of Dude Therapist Season 5. Can you believe it? I can't. What a journey. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whether it's your first episode you've listened to, or you've been a follower since the beginning, or just trying to catch up, I appreciate you. Thanks so much for really jumping in on this awesome opportunity and learning experience. You know, if you have any questions, ask them. If you have thoughts, say them. I didn't finish a thought, or you have more ideas of what you would like to hear, just let me know. The door is open, so to speak, so please walk right in. Tell me what you think. Again, thanks so much for tuning into this week's episode of the Dude Therapist, and hope that you tune in next week.